Welcome to this episode of Lights Out. I'm Sylvia Schultz, your hostess with the mostest ghosties, and this is a very special Christmas episode of Lights Out. The crazy elves over at Drunken Zombie invited me to be a part of their Christmas show, so I couldn't say no. Grab yourself a cup of eggnog, go ahead and spike it, I won't tell, and we'll go Lights Out. So why tell ghost stories at Christmas? That ship sailed at the end of October, didn't it? Ho, 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 not so fast. Take away the candy canes, the bright wrapping paper, and the breakneck shopping, and you've got a very bleak time of year. December marks the turning of the year, the winter solstice, the day on which we have the shortest day and the longest night. The Victorians were all about the ghost stories at Christmas. Dickens' A Christmas Carol is just one long ghost story, really. And this year, many people had their first introduction to Krampus. Krampus is a demonic-looking figure from Germanic folklore. He's got black furry skin, a lolling red tongue, and one cloven hoof and one human foot. Not what you want to see coming down your chimney late at night. But here at Lights Out, we're all about the true ghost stories. Ghosts don't just visit at Halloween, and these tales will prove it. This episode of Lights Out is brought to you in part by Audible.com. Audible, stories that surround you. This first story comes to us from Misty G. Santa stuffs the stockings. When I was 9 years old, I am 30 now, I could not get to sleep on Christmas Eve because I was excited about presents and wondered if my parents had anything to do with the gifts that I received from Santa the year before. That night it was hot because the heater was on. I lived in Texas, so I got thirsty. Also, I was wanting to spy. I got out of bed and cracked open my door to make sure no one was out in the living room, so that way I could get something to drink. When I opened the door, I saw someone bent over. Then he stood up. It was Santa Claus, dressed in the red and white getup. Something strange was that I could see the Christmas lights from the tree shining through him. He was taking the stockings down off the mantel and placing them on the coffee table. When he started to turn around to put the next stocking on the table, I closed the door and jumped into bed. The next morning I woke up and told my sister what I had seen. I told her where he had put the stockings. When we went into the living room, the stockings were where I said he had put them. We both turned and looked at each other and froze for a moment. From then on, I have told everyone that I believe in Santa. The next story comes to us from Skitty Scat. Santa and an Elf. It happened near Seattle, Washington, on Christmas Eve, 1957 or 58. My mom was at the kitchen window when she yelled for my sister and me, ages around 5 and 7, to come look. There was Santa and an elf carrying a big brown bag, walking down the middle of the street. My dad went running out the door to see if Santa would come say Merry Christmas to us kids. But Santa, the elf, and the big brown bag had vanished. This next story comes to us from Arthur H. My mother, to whom I was very close, passed away in 1964 when I was 17 years old. I left home that year and moved to Ontario from Nova Scotia. In 1969, I met a girl whom I will call Karen, and we got married in March of 1970. In December of 1971, we were expecting our first child. We were living in a small 1.5-bedroom bungalow. There was a fireplace in the living room. My wife and I loved the fireplace, and we had it lit every night. It was Christmas Eve, 1971, and we had just finished putting the gifts under the tree, and a nice fire gave off a beautiful glow. On the tree, one string of lights, which was supposed to flash, had stopped several days before. It was 5 minutes to midnight when the fireplace suddenly just about went out, and the string of lights started to flash, and the other lights stopped flashing. My wife and I were sitting on the floor, and had become very chilly in the room. I looked over to my Lazy Boy chair, and a figure was sitting there. My mother, with a big, beautiful smile on her face. My wife, who had never met my mother, said she could see the same thing. This ghost never spoke, but just kept looking at me and my wife and smiling. At 12 midnight, the fire in the fireplace started up again, and the lights on the tree stopped flashing, and the others started flashing again. I looked over in the chair, and the ghost was gone. No matter what I did to those Christmas lights, they never flashed again. The next story comes to us from Mel. The Ghostly Christmas Choir. On Christmas Eve night, 1978, at about 3 a.m. in Klamath Falls, Oregon, I was suddenly awakened by a choir singing. The house was new construction, miles from the nearest church. I strained to hear any words that I could understand or a tune that I could identify, but I could not understand the language or the tune. I did get a feeling of angelic exaltation, reverence, and gladness of heart. This was truly a heavenly choir, lifting their voices on high, singing Hosanna in the highest in an unknown tongue without accompaniment of instruments. I examined the television, but it was turned off, as was the radio. I explored outside, but the singing was not heard outdoors. The way the countless male, female, and children's voices entwined together, the tonals going from operatic highs to the deepest bass voices in perfect harmony, it must have lasted about 10 minutes, but it was touching for an eternity. This final story is brought to us by UFODigest.com. The following weird tale took place in Liverpool, England in the early 1990s, and it has never been explained. It all started one foggy December evening in 1991. On the evening of Friday, December 20th, 1991, at 7 p.m., the Edwards family of Dovecot decided to go and do a bit of late Christmas shopping in Liverpool city center. Mr. Edwards drove his wife and 4 kids to town in his old Volvo estate, and, as usual, finding a place to park proved to be a real pain. Mr. Edwards drove about, searching desperately for a parking space, as his 3 sons and daughter gazed at the spectacular Christmas lights and decorations lining the streets. The youngest of the Edwards children was Abby, who was only 6 years old. As Abby's dad was grumbling about finding a place to park the Volvo, her mom suddenly pointed to a secluded side street called Bold Place, which runs from Berry Street, past the back of St. Luke's Church, up to Roscoe Street. "You're a genius," Mr. Edwards complimented his wife, and he turned left and drove up the poorly lit cobbled road, which was on a bit of an incline. As soon as the car was parked up, the kids eagerly jumped out of the vehicle, and all 4 of them started asking their parents what they were getting for Christmas. Meanwhile, an icy fog rolled down the street. The family were about to walk off when Mr. Edwards suddenly noticed something, and his heart skipped a beat. With a look of dread, he glanced about Bold Place and muttered, "Where's Abby?" Everyone looked around. Mr. Edwards anxiously looked through the windows of the car, but his little daughter wasn't there. "Where's she gone?" Mrs. Edwards asked with a tremble in her voice. The 3 boys looked about, but the street was empty. Then they all heard a faint voice scream out in the distance, "Daddy!" The voice sounded like Abby, and it came from the top of Bold Place towards Roscoe Street. The Edwards family rushed up the cobbled road with the father leading the way. "Abby!" Mr. Edwards shouted. "Where are you?" The gates at the back of St. Luke's were open, and Mr. Edwards surmised that his daughter had wandered into the precincts of the old church. He hurried into the grounds, followed closely by his wife and their sons, and once again they all heard Abby cry out for her father. But the little girl was nowhere to be seen, and the fog was getting thicker by the minute. Mr. Edwards didn't want to alarm his wife and kids, but he wondered if some lunatic had grabbed his daughter and taken her into the ruins of the old church. He handed his wife the car keys and told her to go bring the flashlight from the vehicle. She did this, and Mr. Edwards climbed up onto the ledge of a church window and shone the flashlight into the deserted church ruins. The interior was deserted, with nothing but rubble scattered about. Mr. Edwards knew that the Church of St. Luke had been gutted by an incendiary bomb in World War II during the Blitz. Only the shell of the building survived, and the church had been left that way as a reminder of the war. And yet, it sounded as if Abby's voice had come from inside the church. As Mrs. Edwards helped her husband down from the window, she said, "Listen!" It was the faint, eerie sounds of a church organ, and it seemed to be emanated from the church. The family went to the police station in Hope Street and told the desk sergeant about their lost daughter. The sergeant alerted all the patrol cars in the area and told officers on the city center beat to be on the lookout for the girl. The Edwards family then rushed back to Bold Place to resume their search for the girl. They searched the grounds of St. Luke's once again, and after 20 minutes they were about to return to their car when something happened which continues to puzzle the Edwards family to this day. A tall man, wearing a top hat and a long black coat, came out of the grounds of St. Luke's, and walking with him was little Abby, holding his hand. When Abby saw her mom and dad, she ran to them and started to cry as her father picked her up. The sinister man in black looked like something out of the Victorian age. He had long, bushy sideburns, a pallid face, and staring ink-black eyes. He stood outside the gates of the church, and in a creepy, low voice, the outdated-looking stranger said, "Please accept my sincere apology for any distress caused." He then turned and walked silently back towards the rear of the church ruins. Then a police patrol car came tearing down the road, and Mr. Edwards told the officers in the vehicle about the stranger who had returned his daughter. Three police officers bolted from the car and rushed into the grounds of the church, wielding their batons. But the police found no one. The grounds were empty. More police turned up, and the grounds were searched again with powerful flashlights, but the place was deserted. However, several police officers also heard the faint strains of a church organ playing nearby somewhere, but they never determined just where the strange music was coming from. One of the policemen asked little Abby where she had been, and the child gave a strange account. She said an old woman in a shawl had grabbed her hand and dragged her into the church where a mass was being held. In the church there were many people dressed in old-fashioned clothes. The women wore big hats, and the men were all dressed in black. Abby had screamed for her father, but the old woman had put her hand over the girl's mouth to silence her. Some time later, a tall man came into the church and pulled Abby from the old woman's clutches. He had been the man who had taken Abby back to her parents. The intrigued policeman continued to interrogate the child, and he asked her if the man had spoken to her about the strange incident. Abby shook her head, then said, "The man said he had been a long time dead. That's all." A cold shudder ran up everyone's spine when they heard the child's reply. Since that strange incident, the Edwards family refused to go anywhere near St. Luke's Church, especially during the Christmas period. I want to thank the crew at Drunken Zombie for inviting me to be a part of their Christmas show. You guys totally rock. And thank you all for listening. Happy Hanukkah, blessed solstice, happy Kwanzaa, happy St. Nicholas Day, Eo Saturnalia. Merry Christmas to all, and to all, lights out.